Senate State Government Finance and Policy and Elections Committee, today being Tuesday, February 8th, 2022. So welcome, everyone. Reminder that this is a hybrid as well as in person. And so we will be proceeding under the customary Senate rules. And this being the second week, I think everybody's kind of got in the swing of what we need to do here. So again, we have our members of the committee that we have here, and we also have some online as well. So we're just waiting to be sure we can get some things ready for our first item on the agenda. And this item is for the Campaign Finance Board. This is a confirmation hearing for an appointee, Mr. George Soule. And we have Mr. George Soule today on the Zoom, and so we'll hear from him shortly. And then also Mr. Jeff Sigurdsson, who's with the Campaign Finance Board, their executive director. He is available for questions, but really at this point, this is about the confirmation of Mr. Soule. So we're glad to have you here today, Mr. Soule. And to just get things rolling, I want to welcome you to the committee. And once you do, please state your name and then for the audio record, and then just go ahead and proceed with your opening comments to the committee. So again, welcome, Mr. Soule. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair Kiffmeyer and members of the committee. My name is George Soule. I live in Minneapolis. I appreciate the opportunity to participate by Zoom today because my family and I are in Phoenix for a short while.
Oh, that's too bad.
I grew up in Becker and Clay counties in Minnesota. My mother grew up in the White Earth Reservation, and I am a member of the White Earth Band of Ojibwe. I graduated from Morehead State University in 1976. I went to law school. I returned to Minnesota and have practiced law in Minneapolis for 43 years. I have a civil litigation practice, civil trial practice. I've tried cases in 19 states, including Minnesota. I'm also a tribal court judge for 5 tribes in Minnesota on their courts of appeals, including my own tribe, the White Earth Band. I've worked in political campaigns for over 50 years, starting in high school, really. In college, I was chair of the Clay County Republican Party. I was a delegate to the 1976 Republican National Convention. When I came back from law school, I was the statewide coordinator of John Anderson's presidential campaign in 1980. Most significantly, I also worked on my wife's campaign for mayor of Minneapolis, Lisa McDonald, in 2001. In the last 25 years, I've focused most of my campaign efforts on judicial campaigns. I was on the board or the Commission on Judicial Selection under Governor Carlson, and then I chaired the commission under Governor Jesse Ventura, and I've stayed very involved with judicial appointments and elections, and I've chaired several campaigns for Supreme Court justices in Minnesota and worked on other campaigns. I've also actually served as treasurer twice for campaigns, not under the purview of the Minnesota Board, Campaign Finance Board, but one federal and one Minneapolis campaign. I consider myself politically an independent. I take a nonpartisan approach and apply the law as a board member. I try to be fair and impartial. I do not come to the board with an agenda. You may know that I was nominated for this board last February, I think. So I have sat in on several members and participated as a board member in several meetings. And my experience has been that the board makes nonpartisan decisions. The board is blessed with an excellent staff, I think. And I take this position with a high degree of respect for the political process and the people who put themselves out there to run for office. I have and intend to display a compassion for those people who make innocent mistakes in this process. But that's kind of my background and my approach to this position on the campaign finance board. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Soul. No question, you do have quite a career for you. I think in your letter, though, what I was most interested in that I saw here, though, was that the respect you have was certainly there, but also that you believe strongly in First Amendment freedoms, a vigorous and healthy exchange of ideas in political campaigns and policymaking. And your entire career has been based on strong support for the rule of law. Those are comments that I thought was really, really important. And I appreciated that letter. That plus your credentials has put you in a good spot that I think you would be a good fit for the campaign finance board. So I appreciate that. And understand the credentials that you have is one thing, but I felt that in your letter you made some very good comments. Having read your packet, I don't have any, and having talked with you, I don't have any further questions for you, but I will open it up to members. If anybody, Senator Clausen.
Thank you very much, Chair Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Soul, thank you for your service and stepping up and accepting this position. Again, looking through your credentials, I don't think we could find a more qualified person, a person that's really dedicated to public service. So I want to thank you for that and just express my appreciation for you stepping forward to accept the position. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator Clausen. We also have a member on Zoom, Senator Carlson, who either has a question or wants to make a comment. Senator Carlson.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure that that the committee knows, and Madam Chair, that you know that this person is an extraordinary person for this position. I have known Mr. Soul for close to 20 years, and even though we probably lean different directions in our overall political, let's say, party preference, I've worked with him on judiciary campaigns, and he may not remember, but we had a long conversation at the hospital in Woodbury when a mutual friend of ours had a hip implant going on. And at the time, he was working on his on promoting his law school classmate to be the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. John Roberts was his classmate in law school, and so I'm seeing that Mr. Soul has a lot of experience, a lot of background, and I need to say that I have relied on him for information, because in his former law firm, Bowman and Brook, I recommended that my daughter contact him and get a reading on Bowman and Brook before she joined the Bowman and Brook law firm. So I think that Mr. Soul is one of the most, let's say, reliable, accurate, and nonpartisan voices that we could get onto this committee, the campaign finance board. And he is also extremely experienced in, let's say, all details of following the rules and also enforcing the rules. So I can't recommend Mr. Soul higher than what we're finding here.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. Any other members, questions or comments? Okay, seeing none, Mr. Soul, we're glad to have you here today. And I'm going to call on Senator Osmek to make the motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Committee on State Government, Finance and Policy and Elections recommend that the Senate confirms the appointment of George Soul as a member of the Minnesota Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board.
Thank you, Senator Osmick. On that, we'll take a vote. And for those who are on Zoom, this is not a roll call vote. It is a voice vote. So take the time to unmute so that your voice can be heard. With that, I'll proceed. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails, and the confirmation is acted upon positively here in the Senate. Congratulations, Mr. Soule.
Thank you, Chair Kiffmeyer and senators.
All right. With that, Mr. Soule, this will still need to go to the Senate floor, but that'll be a process. We will inform you of the next step in the process, Mr. Soule. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And enjoy your time.
Well, I am working down here,
oh,
but I'm enjoying it too.
Oh, good. Great. Thank you. Okay, members, with that, we have two bills on our agenda today. Senator Limmer has both of these bills, and I'm glad to see members here today. It is very welcome to have you participating in this process and being here in person. There's a value that comes from in person that you just don't get on what I call the Flat Stanley Zoom meetings. And so here we are today. And by the way, if any of you want to testify to in either of these bills, we have Paige today who is sitting behind the chair testifying table there. And so if you do, please print your name on a piece of paper and which bill you want to testify to, hand it to her, and she will get it up here to the committee administrator so we can make sure that's taken care of. You may know your name very well, but handwriting and just saying it out loud isn't quite as good as having it printed. So I appreciate you doing that. Glad to have you testify. Okay, Senator Limmer, I'm going to go ahead and move the bill, Senate File 2672. Senator Limmer, welcome to the committee. Glad to have you here today.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And when you're ready, proceed and present your bill.
Just one correction. The young lady sitting behind me is not your Paige. She's my L.A.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Where's our Paige, then? I need to have somebody. Okay, would you sit on the end or there somewhere so that the, or be available? Okay, so somebody, because this is the first time in person, I think, in almost 2 years, so we're just kind of working things out as we go. So thank you for assisting in that very important piece of information, Senator Limmer. But she's been very helpful. She's been up here and kind of around and doing things, and I thought, well, with all the changes in Zoom and hybrid, you just never know what we're going to have. And Senator Limmer, you also have an amendment. Is that correct? Do you want to present your bill?
Why don't we have the committee consider that? I believe it's a technical amendment, but I'll allow counsel to explain it.
Okay. All right. We have the amendment here, and I will move the A2 amendment, and then if counsel could go ahead and just give an explanation of it for Senator Limmer. Ms. James?
Madam Chair and members, this deletes Section 2 of the bill. Section 2 of the bill did a couple things. One, it provided for confirmation to be, or for a person, a new appointee to take their role upon Senate confirmation. But that is in conflict with the process that's set out in 15.066, which is also referenced in this language in the bill on line 2.6. And so to address that conflict, the best thing to do is to delete Section 2. Section 2 also had some technical corrections that aren't particularly important. So the easiest way to handle the situation is to just delete Section 2.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. James. Senator Limmer, do you want to add anything before we act on this amendment?
No, Madam Chair. I think it's the council's explanation was adequate.
Okay, all right. Members, any questions? Seeing none. All those in favor of the A2 amendment to Senate File 2672, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails, and the A2 amendment to Senate File 2672 is adopted. Okay, Senator Limmer, now we should be able for you to go ahead and present your bill as amended.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, Senate file number 2672 creates a requirement of confirmation of Minnesota Sentence Guideline Commission members. And I bring this bill forward with the following thoughts in mind. First, I believe foremost there is a separation of powers concern in the existing system of how we appoint members and what their responsibilities are. Right now, the commission has members who are moving towards what I believe is somewhat of a de facto legislature. The vast majority of those who serve on this commission are unelected, and they are appointed by a governor. They have no true accountability directly to the people of Minnesota like we do. We have to stand for election, call it approval by the voters from one term to the next. These members serve concurrently with whoever the governor is. So when a governor leaves office or it ends that four-year term, their term ends as well. They could stand for reappointment, but nevertheless, the people of Minnesota are not directly involved in their appointment. When this has been the case with other boards and commissions in Minnesota, the legislature has seen fit to require confirmation of these members by the Senate. And I'm simply extending through this bill the same concept to the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission. As a background, three members who serve on the commission are from the judiciary. The remaining eight members are appointed by a governor to four-year terms. And as I said before, it coincides with the governor's term in office. My concern is that the Sentencing Guidelines Commission has increasingly become interested in writing policy, mainly adjusting in a downward departure criminal sentences and modifying other items such as probation terms. They recently, a year and a half ago approximately, they considered reducing or capping probation terms to a five-year cap for most criminal sentences once someone gets out of prison. It's somewhat of a one-size-fits-all. It does not directly recognize proportionality such as the rest of our sentencing guidelines grid. You may recall that the sentencing guidelines grid that we rely or that judges rely on is a balance between the severity of the crime and the criminal history that a particular suspect or a defendant might have in his past. If he has a prolonged history of criminal activity and doesn't quite learn from his errors before, he would more than likely get a higher prison term or a sentence of some sort. Also at the same time, they're considering not recognizing a custody status point. One of those points on criminal history is whether it equals a half a point in consideration by a judge, and it would be applied to someone now if they violated their probation by breaking the law. A half a point could be considered by a judge to be added to that individual's history, and then a sentence would be appropriately served by the judge considering that particular case. I believe that issue has been tabled by the Sentencing Guidelines Commission after quite an avalanche of opposition, public opposition that came forward. I find these practices by the Sentencing Guidelines Commission a bit alarming. I believe in representational government. I think we all do. Many years ago, approximately 40 years ago, that authority was given to the Sentencing Guidelines Commission, and they still have it. However, I'm not necessarily changing that particular aspect of their responsibilities, but if they are doing and changing mainly sentencing guidelines, I think the legislature should be involved. The public, through the legislature, should be involved in that, and not an appointed panel by a governor. It, in my opinion, it gives an executive branch far too much power, and it violates the very concept of democratic representational governing. And as I said before, all we would like to do is be the instrument, be the legislative instrument that thoroughly vets and analyzes the members before they're appointed. And just like other boards and commissions, we do the very same thing with those. I think it's wholly appropriate to have that responsibility given to the legislature as we consider appointees. Today's bill focuses on whether those individual commissioners as candidates need that further vetting. I believe they do.
Thank you very much, Senator Limmer. I think that issue of checks and balances is such deeply rooted in our founding of our country and the U.S. Constitution. And I think that adding this, that general philosophy falling through here, I think can be a really good one. With that, members, we have an amended bill in front of us. Do we have any other amendments at this time? I have not been notified ahead of time, so we'll proceed as there is no amendments. Well, I think if you are talking about a particular senator, would you?
Madam Chair.
Senator Osmond.
If Senator Clausen wishes to move an amendment, he certainly can. He is right there. Staff should not be identifying amendments.
Yes.
That is up to the senator.
Yes. Senator Clausen, do you want to do that? I apologize that we just had a issue here. That's not what we do, and certainly is your right now to offer or to not without any question.
I do have the A3 amendment, and if Ms. James would distribute that.
Madam Chair.
Ms. James.
Madam Chair and members, the amendment has been emailed to you, as well as the paper copies that are being distributed in the room.
Thank you. Okay, Senator Clausen, you want to go ahead and present?
Thank you. Well, this...
Senator Clausen, rules here again. We need to wait about 30 seconds to get the amendment posted, and then we'll do it. Is that a Senate rule we have to do, or just practice? You can start describing?
Madam Chair.
Okay. You can go ahead, Senator.
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Could you instruct your staff to give me a copy of the amendment?
Yes, sir. Extra copies should be made available for anybody who would like one. We have some new pages for this year, and again, they are also working things out as far as their process, so appreciate your patience in that regard. Senator Clausen, you can go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, the A3 amendment sets a limit of 60 legislative days for the Senate to take up appointment confirmations. And this is coming about because we've seen over time that both parties at times tend to let these stretch out for several months, sometimes years, before they're taken up by the Senate. So in this particular case, we're looking at establishing a limitation of 60 legislative days for the Senate to take up the confirmation. If the Senate does not take up the confirmation, that person will be automatically confirmed.
Thank you, Senator Claussen. Senator Limmer, in regards to this amendment to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Claussen, I have not considered such an adjustment. It seems interesting, but at this particular time, I would prefer not adding this to the bill. I'd like to have further discussion, perhaps with you and others, as it travels. I just need to have a little bit more counsel and advice from staff later. But at this time, I would prefer not adding this at this time. Oh, and Madam Chair, there's some stricken language, and I was wondering if the author of the amendment could explain the stricken language as well.
Thank you, Senator Limmer. Senator Claussen.
Senator Limmer, would you repeat that, please?
Yes, Madam Chair, on page 1, starting on line 10 through 12, there's a stricken language. And I was wondering if you could explain why we are striking that language.
Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Senator Limmer's lines of the bill again. Could you repeat?
Page 1.
Senator Limmer.
Line 10 through 12.
Of the amendment.
Of the amendment.
Of the amendment. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Limmer, you're asking for an explanation?
That's right.
Of why the 60 days?
No, why the language is stricken on lines 10 through 12.
Senator Claussen.
I'm sorry. The term of any member appointed or reappointed by the governor expires on that date. I think the amendment clarifies that a little bit and just restricts it to 60 days. So it sets a minimum of 60 legislative days rather than looking at governor's term or looking at a restriction that's put on based upon an appointment or reappointment by the governor. So it's very simple of a 60-day limitation.
Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, perhaps counsel could explain the stricken language.
Okay.
There's a reference also on line 13. There seems to be something magical about January 1991. And I just would like to better understand why that language has been stricken. Is it simply old language that needs to be removed? Perhaps mm-hmm. counsel could give us a little bit more insight into the reasoning.
Thank you, Senator Limmer. Yes, Ms. James, would you? I'm sure you heard the question. If you just would explain as requested by Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair and members, the changes on lines 10 through 13 and also on line 6 of Senator Claussen's amendment were in the original bill, and these are those technical items, those technical cleanup items that I mentioned were also being accomplished in Section 2. They're eliminating obsolete language because now we're in this period after 1991, so we don't need to specify how things are treated after 1991.
Thank you, Ms. James. Senator Osmick and then Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Claussen, I have a couple questions for you. First, Senator Claussen, how many other appointments that the Senate has confirmation powers over have this 60-day stipulation on it?
Senator Claussen.
Well, you're talking about what should be and perhaps what is, but you're correct. None of them currently have a 60-day limitation that I'm aware of.
Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is groundbreaking. This is brand new territory we're moving into. One additional question. Senator Claussen, if the governor decided the day after the legislature adjourns for interim or sine die, if the governor appoints the day after we leave, there is no special session, that by de facto would subvert the nomination or the confirmation process overtly, and that person would go straight in based upon your language. Is that not correct, Senator Claussen?
Senator Claussen.
I think the scenario you're describing is would be pretty rare. I can't imagine that it's happened or it has happened in the past, but I think that, you know, speculating on that is something that we wouldn't want to undertake.
Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Senator Claussen, you know, we make laws that are not just for when we're in session, they're for when we're out of session. And to say that the governor may or may not do something, this makes it so that they would go back to non-confirmation. The governor's office could appoint anyone they see fit. If there's a vacancy, Senator Claussen, after we leave, the governor certainly can appoint that. A person might move out of state. The person may have a medical condition which makes them unable to perform their duties. The governor has every right under his powers to make that immediate appointment of whoever he wants as long as he fits, they fit the category. So to say that we should be ignoring the fact that this may happen, you know, we make laws all the time for what may or may not happen, and certainly the executive branch could abuse the situation by appointing someone where we are not going to be back for a confirmation within 60 days. It would be an automatic appointment, defeating the purpose of Senator Limmer's bill. So, members, I strongly suggest that you defeat the A3 amendment. Thank you.
Madam Chair, can I respond?
It's Senator Claussen, yes.
Thank you. Well, Senator, I think the safety net is that 60 legislative days, so we would have to be in session.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got a question, I believe, from Ms. James, because I understand that we deleted Section 2 because it had some issues with other pieces of legislation. Is this new amendment, A3, does that have the same issues, or did it somehow clean up? The language looks fairly similar, so could you tell us if this has the same problems as the Section 2 prior to deletion had?
Ms. James.
Madam Chair and members, no, this does not have that problem. Senator Claussen's new language does not include the language that was the problem with the original bill. The original bill on line 2.11 said that the successor takes their position when they're confirmed by the Senate. That's not present in Senator Claussen's amendment. It only says what happens in the event that the Senate doesn't take action, which is a different issue, so.
Thank you, Ms. James. Senator Howe? Okay. Nonetheless, I have serious concerns about the impact of this as well. Senator Limmer, do you wish to you've stated already, anything in addition? Otherwise, we'll proceed.
No, Madam Chair, I appreciate the discussion. However, despite the discussion, I'm still opposed to the amendment.
Okay. With that, members, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, please say nay.
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 Motion does not prevail, and the A3 amendment to Senate File 2672 is not adopted. Okay, any other amendments? Okay, seeing none, we're going to go ahead and Senator Limmer, you have closing remarks in regards to this bill?
Madam Chair, this bill is a reminder that the legislature is the one that represents the public. And when it comes to adjusting, modifying, or making new law, that should be in the hands of the legislature, not appointees of the executive branch, or anyone else for that matter. It clearly follows the principles of representational government, and I believe when it comes to an appointed committee having the power and authority of writing law, somehow we're on the wrong track, and we have to pull it back and readjust especially on these during these times when you have explosion of violent criminals victimizing innocent citizens, especially in the metropolitan area, that authority really is in the hands of the legislature. And this particular bill will move us back into that proper alignment.
Thank you, Senator Limmer. And you know, Senator Limmer, serving on the Judiciary Committee last year, I remember a bill that we needed to do having to do with the Sentencing Guidelines Commission. And in this area, it had to do with pornography, obscenity, especially with children. And they were going to take an action that would have lightened that, in particular, I think the phrase of Hernandizing, not that proportionality concept and that building on future crimes, and especially with the sale and resale, the victimizing of these children again and again. And that probably, for me, exemplified the egregious situation of the Sentencing Guidelines Commission legislating and acting and behaving in such a way. But when it was done in regards to abused children and especially heinous crimes of rapes of 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, and 4-year-olds, and not have that and videotaping and all that, Senator Limmer, at that point, I'm more than ready for the accountability that this bill needs to bring to this particular commission. So I'm very glad to see it. And Senator Carlson, you have your hand up. I already did call for comments. I asked for amendments, and then I went for closing comments to the author, which is our normal process. So Senator Carlson, I'll give you an opportunity right now, but in the future, I will not be going back once we have gone to closing comments and ready to vote. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, I didn't want to ask the question until we did look at that A3 amendment. But I do want to ask the questions, and I think everyone has concerns over what is happening to people who have gone into the conviction process here. And I'm wondering, I think we know that these are guidelines, so they don't necessarily have to be followed. And I'm wondering if Senator Limmer, if you have some information on what downward departures have happened, and perhaps even what upward departures from these guidelines have happened. And I'm assuming that you're concerned about downward departures. Is that correct?
Thank you, Senator Carlson, for that question. But Senator Carlson, the bill that we have in front of us today doesn't really deal with that. It deals with confirming the appointments to the within the Senate. So it's a procedural kind of a thing. My concern is we start having this discussion further, which is really the purview of the Judiciary Committee. I will give Senator Limmer just a moment, since you may want to address this matter and go ahead and do so, but that will then we'll conclude that and we'll proceed to the completing the process for this particular bill. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Carlson, I'm sure you might recall, and believe me, sometimes this type of policy, you get into the weeds a little bit, but nevertheless, in the course of creating a sentencing guidelines grid, judges require or look at that before sentencing. And it creates a range that a judge should impose a sentence. We leave that fine tuning of that sentence to the discretion of a judge. Oftentimes, they will make an adjustment. Most of the time, they're within that range. Sometimes they can be at the low end of the range where the penalty is quite a bit less than the higher range. I do not have a record in front of me of all the downward or upward departures that have been created over thousands of cases in the state of Minnesota. Suffice it to say, when the Sentencing Guidelines Commission alters alters the sentence in statute, it changes the grid, and the whole range could go down, at least when they're going in a downward fashion or lessening the impact of a criminal sentence. It also can cause a ripple throughout the entire sentence guidelines grid itself and can affect other particular sentences as well for other crimes. So it behooves us to put that decision in the proper hands, and that's the hands of the people who are elected by the public to make those changes and not an appointed body.
Thank you, Senator Limmer. Okay, with that, members, we're going to go ahead and proceed to a vote. I will move Senate File 2672 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to general orders. On that motion, members, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails, and Senate File 2672 as amended is passed and is on its way to general orders. Thank you, Senator Limmer. You have another bill before us today, Senator Limmer, so we're going to go ahead and do that as well. If I recall right, we have an A1 amendment as well. So I will move for purpose of preparing for action, Senate File, 2669. And we have an amendment, so Senator Limmer, would you like us to also take action on the amendment and have Ms. James explain it?
Madam Chair, yes, I would like the committee to consider the amendment.
Okay. I will move the A1 amendment to Senate File 2669. Ms. James, could you explain the amendment?
Madam Chair and members, the A1 is strictly technical fixes. The original bill referred to staff, and typically we try to use the term employees, and also it put people into the classified service when we really put positions into classified services. So just technical changes to clean that kind of thing up.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. James. Senator Limmer?
Madam Chair, would you want to vote on that amendment?
Yes, I would. I just want, if you want to add any comments to it, and you don't have to.
I have nothing more to add.
Okay, all right. Any questions for members on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, again, I'll renew my motion to adopt the A1 amendment to Senate File 2669. Mm-hmm. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The A1 amendment to Senate File 2669 is adopted. Senator Limmer,
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. Senate File 2669 is a completely different issue regarding the Sentence Guidelines Commission. As you may know, Sentencing Guidelines Commission is a very disciplined and unique collection of subjects that our staff is challenged with all the time. It's a rather unique area of law, and it requires a unique personnel to deal with it. And it's a relatively small staff as well. Some of these people have been working for us for over 20 years in this very finite area of the law, but they are not classified employees. In this regard, this would change the status and move them to classified. I think it's that classification is worthy of their work. As I have worked with Sentencing Guidelines Commission, we rely on them for much more than the relationship of the commission members, but the staff is so critical in giving the legislature proper insight, value, advice, and oftentimes a collection of data that no one else in the state would collect. And Madam Chair, it's been described to me that these employees are some of the best in the state. And they work very long hours, and they're there, and it's amazing to me how they can gather information so quick and get it back to us for putting a proper perspective on the issues that we have to deal with. I would like to mention their names, Madam Chair, because they're really worthy to have that recognition. The individuals I'm talking about is Ann Wall, Jill Payne, Linda McBriar, Kathleen Madlin, and Shauna Mahabir. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And I also have a testifier, Madam Chair, Mr. Nate Reitz, who's the Director of the Sentence Guidelines Commission. And if he wished to make any comments, this would be the appropriate time.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Reitz. Glad to have you here. And when ready, state your name and title for the audio record, and then proceed with your comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Nate Reitz. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission. I sometimes tell people that I have 11 bosses and 5 employees. The last bill was talking about my 11 bosses. This bill is talking about my 5 employees. And really, it's a different scope. The commission really is looking at policy work, as Chair Limmer described. The staff is more focused on the commission's role as a clearinghouse and information center for sentencing data statewide. So that's really what they spend the bulk of their work doing, in addition to supporting the commission's work. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of Senate File 2069, the bill that would give the 5 state employees whom I supervise the employment protections that come with classified status. These 5 employees are all analysts. 4 are in the research analyst family, and 1 is in the management analyst family. They are all MAPE contract employees, but unlike most MAPE contract employees, they are statutorily unclassified. This bill updates a statutory provision that goes back 44 years, dating back to the dawn of the nation's first sentencing guidelines commission. At that time, the 1978 legislature made the entire staff unclassified, and it's not obvious to me why it did so at that time. If you kind of tick down the reasons why in statute an employee might be unclassified, none of them really seem to apply. These employees are not elected. They are not agency heads or deputies. They deal in public data and policies, not confidential commission deliberations. They're not required to be loyal to a particular commission, but they serve a new commission as often as every 4 years. And they don't report directly to the commission. I report directly to the commission. And finally, they're certainly not temporary employees. As Chair Limmer already alluded to, the average length of service for these 5 people is 20 years of service, and some have served quite a bit longer than that. By migrating these employees to the classified service, this bill solves 2 concrete problems, both of which I experienced in the last couple of years. The first was when I believed that our agency was facing a looming budget crunch, a budget shortfall. I did some research and I discovered that these employees are not eligible for layoffs. So if we ran out of money in the last biennium, we would have just terminated their appointments. There wouldn't have been any guarantee that their appointments would have been, they would have been reappointed when money resumed. The second concrete problem was, and actually this is the reason why we didn't have the budget crunch, is one of our research analysts moved to Colorado. So we had a vacancy for quite some time due to the hiring freeze. And when we finally did hire somebody, I felt I was at a competitive disadvantage because I couldn't offer these employees the same job security that other state positions customarily have. There's basically zero job security with an unclassified employee. They are at-will employees. So I felt I was at a competitive disadvantage with respect to other state agencies and possibly even the private sector as well in competing for employees. This bill solves both of these problems by simply making these 5 analysts regular classified state employees, giving them the same protections against termination and eligibility for layoff that nearly all other MAPE contract employees enjoy. This no expense, common sense, entirely non-controversial bill is supported by me, by the 5 employees themselves, and by the entire Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission, which wrote in last year's report to the legislature, quote, because MSGC staff require a great deal of specialized technical expertise where continuity is vital, these five positions are long overdue for the employment protections that come with classified service. In short, this bill is the right thing to do by these five outstanding state employees. Madam Chair, on behalf of the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission, I thank Chair Limmer and I thank you for authoring this good bill, and I respectfully ask for the committee's support. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony here today. Senator Limmer, do you want to have further comments, or I'll open it up to members for questions?
Madam Chair, I think we covered the explanation of the bill, but I will stand for questions if there are any.
Members, any questions for the author, Senator Limmer? I'm not seeing any. All right. Closing comments?
Madam Chair, I think Executive Director Wrights did a much better job than what I can do, so I'll stand right now.
All right. With that, members, we'll proceed to a vote. Those of you on Zoom, please unmute. And I will move Senate File 2669 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to general orders. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and it is adopted. Senator Limmer, both your bills are on your way.
Thank you, members. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Senator Limmer. Appreciate it. And with that, members, we've concluded our agenda, and we have committee hearing tomorrow. So I will see you tomorrow. We are adjourned.